NBA on NBC.
What is up, everybody? This is Jim Mylock, and you're listening to Pot of Fame, the podcast where we break down the careers of former athletes and decide whether or not they should get a call to the Hall. On today's podcast, we're talking about former Detroit Tigers second baseman Lou Whitaker and whether or not he belongs in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And joining us in just a moment to discuss Lou's career and Hall of Fame candidacy is Detroit Tigers beat writer at The Athletic, Cody Stavenhagen. Now, if that all sounded familiar to you, it's because it could be, if you've been listening to this pod for the last 3 or so years. Because we actually did this podcast back in May of 2021, coming up on 3 years ago. Episode 56 was on Lou Whitaker with Cody Stavenhagen. And for the first time on Pod of Fame, we are doing a re-release in honor of Lou Whitaker's 67th birthday, which was actually yesterday on Sunday, on Mother's Day. Now, I did this podcast about 3 years ago, with Cody, and, you know, lucky for us, Lou Whitaker has not played another baseball game since then, so everything we discussed is exactly the same. So this episode is timeless. So why re-release it? Well, other than to celebrate Lou Whitaker's birthday, again, which was yesterday, Lou Whitaker's still not in the Hall of Fame today. And to be honest, since episode 56, almost 3 years ago, this podcast has come a long way. We've, over the years, garnered quite the audience. And when I released this, I would say my audience was significantly smaller than it is today. And although anyone at any time can go back in my, you know, catalog of pods and go back and listen to this, it's... You know, you don't know what's in the earlier episodes. You might not feel like searching. And occasionally, I think I will do a re-release of a player if they're still not in. Or I think it, you know, is a topic that people today might want to listen to that maybe, you know, 3 years ago, they weren't around yet. So wanted to celebrate a lot of my new listeners today, or at least the listeners, you know, that I didn't have 3 years ago, which, again, is a big difference between when we first released this. And again, Lou Whitaker has one of the more interesting Hall of Fame cases. And that stands still today. Not much has changed there. So we're going to bring Cody on. We're going to talk about Lou Whitaker. It's the same pod from 3 years ago. So if you listened to that 3 years ago, definitely worth a re-listen. If you haven't, this is like a brand new episode. But before we get to the episode, I do want to do a little bit additional commentary here at the top. So first, let's go with the quick facts about Lou Whitaker. Lou Whitaker only played for the Detroit Tigers, and he had a very, you know, impressive career. He played from 1977 to 1995, and during that time, he won Rookie of the Year. He was a member of the 1984 World Series champion Detroit Tigers team. He was a five-time All-Star, a four-time Silver Slugger, and a three-time Gold Glove winner. For his career, a 75.1 WAR, 2,369 hits, 1,197 walks, 1,386 runs, 420 doubles, 244 home runs, 1,084 RBIs, 143 stolen bases, and he had a .276 batting average with a .363 on base, a .426 slugging with a .117 OPS plus. He's also fourth all-time in MLB history in games played at second base, fourth all-time at second base in Major League history in double plays, sixth in assists, and ninth in fielding runs, all at second base. So those are Lou Whitaker's kind of quick facts. He was on the ballot in 2001, fell off right away, 2.9% of the vote that year. So it is now up to the Contemporary Baseball Era Committee to vote him in. And that committee will meet again in December of 2025 to vote for the class of 2026. So Lou's still about a year out from, a little over a year out for being voted on again. And I think he will be on that ballot. So before I bring Cody on, something I don't talk about in the pod as much that I want to talk about now, because yes, Lou's stats haven't changed since we last did this podcast. The case for Lou is really the same. But in the 3 years since I did this, I would say I've grown as someone who, again, tracks the Baseball Hall of Fame, someone who has now, in the last 3 or so years, talked to many more Hall of Fame voters, talked to many more players in baseball. And I wouldn't say my views have changed too much, but I appreciate certain things maybe more than I did before. And something I want to call out, and this is really relative to Joe Mauer being voted into the Hall of Fame this year. But around Joe Mauer, a lot of people thought he was a slam dunk, but a lot of people couldn't get over Joe Mauer's, career statistics, right? You look at Joe Mauer's home runs, well under 200, RBIs, under 1,000. He had a great career batting average, but his counting stats are not really, I would say, what someone would think is a Hall of Famer. But when you take into account that he was a catcher, and when you take into account what he did compared to other catchers, honestly, I think it's a pretty easy case for him. If you compare him to right fielders or center fielders, maybe not so much. But when you compare him to catchers all time, his batting average, on base percentage, OPS plus, some of his peak seasons, over 2,000 hits. It's I won't say it's hard to argue, but totally get the case why. So this whole case around, okay, compare Joe Mauer to catchers, not against, Hank Aaron, Ken Griffey Jr., outfielders or, shortstops, third basemen. Compare him against catchers, he looks pretty well. And I want to do that a little more for Lou Whitaker here at the top before we get into the pod. Because we do talk about plenty about second baseman and all of that, but I just want to call out where Lou stands among second basemen in MLB history. So first of all, second baseman not in the Hall of Fame today, where is he ranked? So there's Cooperstown, who's inducted. We'll talk about that in a second. But, is Lou Whitaker the best second baseman not in the Hall of Fame today? If we're looking at all the second basemen not in Cooperstown today, he's first in WAR, first in runs, second in RBIs, second in hits and walks and total bases, fourth in doubles, fourth in home runs, fourth in fielding runs, if we're talking about defensively. So the Hall of Fame is not all stats, but if you care about stats and a big part of it's stats, there's a very good case that he is the best second baseman not in Cooperstown today. But then if you look at Cooperstown, there's 20 second basemen in the Hall of Fame today. 20. If we were to put Lou in, if Lou was the 21st second baseman going in the Hall, out of those Hall of Famers at second base, he would rank fifth among all the second basemen in the Hall of Fame today in walks. He would be sixth in career WAR. He would be sixth in home runs. 10th in runs scored, 10th in OPS plus, 10th in total bases, 11th in RBIs, and 12th in hits. And that's among 20 Hall of Famers. I mean, anyone that would be like, oh, Lou Whitaker, you're cheapening the Hall of Fame, I don't know about that. I think when you're top 10 among Cooperstown peers in a number of different statistical categories, I think that's a pretty good case. Now, there's some things against Lou Whitaker that Cody and I go into. Was never really getting MVP votes, was never considered a superstar in the league, was just super consistent year to year. But the counting stats he has among second baseman in Cooperstown, they look pretty good. One other thing I just want to call out here before we get to Cody. I was looking at some of the Cooperstown second baseman already in today, and I picked out three of the second baseman in the Hall of Fame that I think, if you were comparing to Lou Whitaker, Lou Whitaker looks kind of better than him. One is Chicago Cub, Johnny Evers, played back in, he was on the World Series team in 1907, 1908 for the Chicago Cubs. Go across town in Chicago to the White Sox, Nellie Fox, Hall of Famer, second baseman. And then Pittsburgh Pirates, famous World Series hero, Bill Mazarski, Hall of Fame second baseman. If you compare Lou against Johnny, Nelly, and Bill, at least from a statistical standpoint, other than hits career-wise, which Nellie Fox leads Lou kind of destroys them all in every other statistical category. It's not really close. He was a way better hitter than all of these players in terms of power, in terms of on-base percentage. Across the board, he just wipes them. You can make a case, you know, defensively, Nelly, Bill, Johnny, all better than Lou, but Lou was an above-average defender. Extremely smooth, you know, three-time Gold Glover, but extremely smooth, great defender. So he was a well above average glove with a excellent bat compared to Johnny, Nelly, and Bill. All excellent gloves, batting-wise, average to above average. Now, when they played, I want to do this, a caveat. Like, when they played, second basemen were not supposed to, you know, hit for power or be great hitters. They were defensive players. They were slick fielders, and all those guys fit that role. And Johnny Evers and Nelly Fox both won MVPs. And again, their accolades better than Lou's. But if we're tossing statistically, Lou Whitaker wipes the floor with all three. Significance in history? You could say Lou's in fourth out of those three other guys. But the Hall of Fame, a big part of it is how you grade out statistically. And Lou Whitaker at least has that in the bag against those guys. And then just in general, if you're a fan of war, and I, trust me, I have listeners to this podcast, some people really believe in war, some call it made up, however you feel, I do think it gives you a good context of at least the ballpark of player we're talking about. I think there's outliers, I think sometimes it doesn't make sense, but I think for the most part, it gives you some sort of context to where this player fits in terms of success on a ball field, success on a ball club. If you're talking about any position, now we're not just talking about second baseman, any position of players not in the Hall of Fame today, not in Cooperstown, Lou Whitaker has the fifth highest WAR of anyone eligible for Cooperstown today that's not in. The fifth highest across any position. Barry Bonds is ahead of him, A-Rod's ahead of him, Pete Rose is ahead of him, and Bill Dahlen's ahead of him. If you don't know who Bill Dahlen is, I got a great episode on him, but he was a shortstop who retired back in 1911. So we have Bonds, A-Rod, linked to steroids. We got Rose, who's not allowed in the Hall of Fame. And then we got Bill Dahlen from 1911, and then Lou Whitaker. Again, is war everything? No. Do I think there's better players than Lou Whitaker not in the Hall of Fame today than just those four? I do. But you don't fall into that high of a war by accident. If you look at players around him in that, like, his WAR is higher than a lot of other people. And again, if you don't believe in it, that's fine. It's just, you don't just get, they didn't make WAR to benefit Lou Whitaker, I promise. But I think it rewards how consistent Lou was. And again, Cody and I talk about quite a bit of that on the pod. So that is my additional commentary 3 years after the podcast. Again, this pod was good without it. I just want to talk a little more about Lou here. And also I want to thank all my listeners. Again, for the people that listened to this 3 years ago, thank you so much for being along for the ride all these years. For new listeners, I'm re-releasing this because I'm sure you've been like, when is this Lou Whitaker episode coming? It's been around. And what I would encourage you to do is I'm not going to re-release too many other podcasts. There's a few on my mind. My second episode ever was CeCe Sabathia. I think I might re-release that at some point or just redo it completely because I didn't have a guest for that one. But go back and check my old episodes. If you're like, oh, I wish you'd hit this person, or oh, I'm waiting for this one, there's a great chance I might have done them. Lou Whitaker, people have been asking me for, they show up in my on Twitter at least all the time, like, hey, you should do a Lou Whitaker episode. I have done it, and that might be the case for many other players. So if there's a player you're looking for, you can either Google my name, Jim Mylock, Pot of Fame, that player, see if the episode pops up. You might be surprised. You might be waiting all this time for an episode that exists already, but I'm glad we could re-release this today. Happy birthday, Lou Whitaker. I hope you had a great birthday yesterday. And I hope you all enjoy this pod. So with the quick facts and the additional commentary out of the way, let's get to Cody once again. All right. So joining us today on the podcast is Cody Stavenhagen from The Athletic. Cody, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing well, Jim. How are you?
I am doing great. So Cody is joining us today to talk about a Hall of Fame candidacy that comes up quite a bit now, especially when the committees, the veterans committees come to meet. And that is the Hall of Fame of former Detroit Tigers second baseman,
baseman Lou Whitaker, who famously, I think now, when he was first on the ballot in 2001, got an extremely disrespectful 2.9% of the vote and fell off immediately. And as we look back now, you know, almost, I guess, 20 years later, with how far advanced metrics have come, how much people place value on war now, when we look back at that, it's shocking that he couldn't even stay on the ballot after 1 year, especially with the kind of career he had. And Cody and I are today going to, of course, as we usually do on the pod, discuss, you know, his career, go through maybe why he's not in the Hall of Fame today. And then Cody, at the end, I ask every guest we bring on, you know, one, do you feel like Lou should be in the Hall of Fame? And then two, do you think he'll ever get in? And just for those listening at home, the last time he was kind of in the news, he was part of the 2020 Modern Era Hall of Fame ballot. This is a committee that meets every so often now. And there's 16 people on these committees. There's ones for different eras throughout the years. When Lou was on that ballot, he got 6 votes. You need 12, so he was 6 off. And that will come back around again. That committee will meet in the fall of 2023 to vote on the class of 2024. So if you're listening in 2023, when I probably put this back out there, welcome to the pod. But Cody, first things first, whenever I bring someone on the pod, I ask, when you hear the name Lou Whitaker, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Yeah, it's kind of funny you ask that. I'm going to be honest in that I come at this from a little different perspective, in that I'm 27 years old. This is my third season covering the Tigers. I'm not from Michigan, so I didn't know a ton about Lou Whitaker other than seeing his face on like 80s Donruss baseball cards growing up, until I began covering the Tigers. So now the first thing I think of when I think Lou Whitaker is the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame, because that's obviously a huge topic around here. We're doing a podcast about it right now. In just a short amount of time, I've become very familiar with Lou Whitaker. I've talked to him. I did a big story on him, you know, a couple of years ago when he was up on that Modern Era ballot. And, you know, it was kind of sad. I think Lou Whitaker believed he was really going to get in there in 2019. Obviously, it didn't happen. I was unsure if he would get in at the time, but I thought it would be closer than the 6 of 12 votes he received. But I think that's just a huge conversation. The Tigers fans who watched him play, now that Alan Trammell is in the Hall of Fame, now that Jack Morris is in the Hall of Fame, they want to see Lou Whitaker in the Hall of Fame too. So it's tough to bring up his name without bringing up the Hall of Fame right now.
No, and that's kind of perfect to have you on. And, you know, you brought up Alan Trammell. He'll probably be brought up a couple times throughout those courses. Famous double play partner, and they basically played their entire careers together. They came up at the same time. I believe they got their hit in the same game, their first hit in the same game, and they got their last career hit against the same pitcher, just Trammell did it a year later. He played one more extra year, and Trammell got in the Hall of Fame in 2018. You know, Cody, from your time in Detroit, being the beat writer there, you know, Trammell got in 2018. Of course, Lou's still waiting. General consensus in the area, just of who you talk to, people around the team, do people, I mean, I think everyone holds them together. They're 1-2. They're a combo. You can't separate them. But do people feel like Trammell was the better player than Lou? Like, because, you know, when you look at their numbers, it's kind of scary. It's like identical. Trammell had a few peak seasons that were better than Lou ever put up. You know, he, of course, won the MVP award in the 84 World Series. But other than that, I mean, consensus around, is it pretty split? Do people feel like Trammell's definitely ahead of Lou, or are they just – they're one and the same, as I look at it, at least.
They are very much mentioned in the same breath as Tram and Sweet Lou, as the double play combination that, you know, the last game at Tiger Stadium, they introduced players one by one from Tigers history, and they introduced Tram and Whitaker together. They walked out on the field together at the same time. So that just gives you a sense of how closely they are linked. I would say I think Tram holds a little bit of a deeper place in Tigers lore, probably just because of his personality being the far more outgoing personality, I think connected with fans on a little deeper level, obviously came back and was a manager, whereas Lou Whitaker was known for keeping to himself, for being a very quiet guy, stayed away from the press a lot during his time as a player, hasn't been super involved with the organization. He's not really involved at all now. I think when Trammell was the manager, he would make some appearances at spring training. But I think for some of those reasons, you know, now that Al Kaline has passed, Alan Trammell is kind of viewed as like the next Mr. Tiger. Trammell doesn't like those comparisons, but it's true. And so Whitaker's not quite held in that same regard. But when you talk about their actual playing careers and what they did on the field, it's tough to mention one without the other.
Yeah, they're like 19 seasons together, turned the most double plays as a combo together. And I don't, with how MLB is today and how people move around or, you know, switch positions even, I don't know if that record will ever be touched. I don't think we think of it as the same as Cal Ripken's consecutive games record is impressive, but still staying along that together, you know, Lou played second base his entire career. He never did shift near the end of his career. Alan was at short the whole time. I don't know if we'll ever see a combo go 19 straight years together. I was trying to put together, Cody, like in my head, my favorite double play combos of all time. And I was shocked how few years some of them played together. Like growing up, I was like, oh yeah, Roberto Alomar, Omar, they played three seasons together. Like that was a combo I always thought of, three seasons. So again, I always view them hand in hand. It's a shame they couldn't kind of go in at the same time. I think that would just be, that would have been a beautiful day for both of them. I believe Trammell talked about Lou in his Hall of Fame speech. And again, I'm sure in Tigers lore, like those two are always thought of at the same time. If you're thinking of Lou, you're thinking of Alan and vice versa. But Cody, I want to move to our next segment here. We call this That Memorable Moment. And I kind of give free rein here. It can be a single play you think of, a season, a playoff series. What is Lou's most memorable moment of his career?
Yeah, I got two I'm going to bring up. The first one, if you talk about an actual play, this is the one I hear about most from Tigers fans. And it's interesting because it's a, you know, it's not a hit. It's not a home run. It's a throw. And it was game one of the 84 World Series. I think it was the seventh inning. Jack Morris has this gem going. The Tigers have a narrow lead. And Kurt Bravacqua hits a ball down the right field line. I think he was leading off the inning. Zooms around second, and he kind of stumbles around second. Kirk Gibson picks up the ball in right field. Kirk Gibson, great of a player as he was, didn't have the best arm. He makes an okay throw to Whitaker as the cutoff man, and Lou just zooms the ball. I mean, I just went back and watched it on video. It's an incredible throw, especially to think of a second baseman making a throw like that. And guns down, you know, nails Bavakwa at third. You see Bavakwa slide head first, and he kind of comes up like, how did the ball even get there? How is that even possible? I think he thought he had a triple easily. He was out, and really that throw changed the complexion of game one, which obviously went on to the Tigers winning the World Series in 84. So I think that's a play fans remember a lot. And then I think the moment that actually tells you about the most about Lou Whitaker has to be the 1985 All-Star Game when Lou Whitaker left his bag in the back of his Mercedes, showed up without a jersey. He borrowed like an extra glove from Cal Ripken. He had to like borrow equipment from everyone. He still didn't have a jersey. They sent someone up to the gift shop where they bought a generic Tigers jersey with no number on the back. They then stenciled in the number, and he played in the 85 All-Star Game with the number one written in, like, I don't know if it was a pen or a Sharpie or what, on the back of his jersey. They made it look pretty good, but you can go find pictures, and it's pretty funny. Apparently that jersey now belongs to the Smithsonian. So that's an idea of how, how funny of a moment that was. And I also, like, that would only happen to Lou Whitaker. He had several other funny moments like that throughout his career, but that's definitely the most famous of them all. This was a guy who didn't take batting practice for like 7 years or something. He just didn't do it. He thought it didn't help him. He was a little bit of an oddball in that regard. And that was also kind of the beauty of Sweet Lou.
Yeah. And that 1984 World Series where he made that play, I went back and watched, I didn't watch the full games, but I was watching some of the highlights of it. Cause like you, Cody, I was not really fortunate to watch him play live. So all we can do is, we got YouTube now, which is good for us, but go back and watch those old. And, you know, I was looking at how he did. Of course, I said Trammell won the MVP award that for that World Series, but You know, I was looking at how Lou performed in there just overall for that whole series. You know, he led the team in runs with six, which is actually tied for the record for most runs in a five-game World Series, led the team in doubles, tied for walks, which walks his entire career. He's great at getting on base. And he scored a run in all five games. And I think that summed it up for me the most for Lou. I think that was fitting for him, right? Because I think that the big thing with his case is he was consistent his entire career from start to finish. Even when he was 38, 39, he was hitting in the high. I think he hit 300 his second to last year. He was kind of platooning at that point. But his entire year, he was extremely consistent. He never had those peak seasons where he's, you know, top five in MVP voting. He actually only got MVP votes one season where he was finished eighth in the league, but he was consistently an above average second baseman for like 15 plus years. There's something I ran across, which it's kind of silly. And I want to get to WAR when we get to court here, but he had 15 seasons with a WAR of over 3.5 or higher. If you look at how many people sustained being at least above average, 3.5 WAR, I think is above average, a 3.5 WAR for over 15 seasons, everyone on this list, Cody, I'm not going to run through the whole list, but they're all not just like Hall of Famers, but all time greats. Like the people tied at 15 seasons with Lou is Ricky Henderson, Ted Williams, Roger Hornsby. That's tied with Lou, and above him, it's just like Hank Aaron, Ty Cobb, Willie Mays, Barry Bonds, like all-time greats. And then Lou's there, and it's silly, right? Lou is not as good as these people. I'm not trying to say that, but it's that sustained greatness. He was always good. He was always playing at an all-star level. And again, when I looked at that 84 World Series, and I just saw him being, you know, never great in the game, never blowing anything out, but got a hit every game but one. In the one game he didn't get a hit, he walked twice. He scored a run every game. He was getting him and Trammell got on base in the first inning every game. It's just, it was the embodiment of his career, that World Series to me. Consistent, not flashy, played flawless defense. And I think that is like when I'm just thinking of Lou Whitaker's career, I think of that 84 series, it just shows his consistency across all the games there.
Yeah, I think longevity is almost undervalued. That's such a difficult thing to do. And when you look at, okay, what should make someone a Hall of Famer? I think everyone has their own definitions a little bit. And I don't know that there has to be one definition. Does it have to be peak greatness? Does it have to be winning an MVP? I don't know. I think if we were to start from scratch, I might be more of a small hall guy and you have to be an all-time great. But I'm also a big fan of precedent. And when you read off those names, when you look at some of the other second basemen who are in the Hall of Fame and Lou Whitaker is not, again, it's kind of silly. Another Tigers comparison. I mean, Kirk Gibson is an analyst on the Bally Sports Detroit broadcast. And sometimes I have to be like, oh yeah, Kirk Gibson's not in the Hall of Fame. And this is a guy who won an MVP, who hit not just one, but two of the most iconic postseason home runs ever. But you look, his peak was very short lived. He had a lot of injuries in his career. His career numbers really are nowhere near Hall of Fame worthy. But if you want to go off fame and a really good peak, you can make like an argument for Kirk Gibson. If you really make an argument for a complete career, Lou Whitaker has as strong an argument, as you just mentioned, of almost anyone who has ever played the game. So I guess it comes down to what do you think the Hall of Fame should be? But like I said, I don't know that there has to be one definition. I think if you were that good for 15 plus years, that is such a rarity that is a different type of greatness all in itself.
Yeah, it's funny with Lou. Like I feel like baseball, so I cover this, Cody, for basketball and football as well. They're very different criteria, so let's just put it that way. But some of those Hall of Fames, they reward like four peak seasons, and then you don't play very long and you're in. Or a running back in the NFL, you can have four Terrell Davis, four excellent years, and then just fall off the map because of injuries and you're in the Hall of Fame. In baseball, I feel like, I mean, it's by far the toughest. I'll say that first off the bat, but you need to play for a very long time. Unless you're Sandy Koufax, you need to play and accumulate stats for a very long time to be in the Hall of Fame. You have to have peak seasons, seems like, and you have to have sustained success. Again, Lou has sustained success, but it's those peak seasons. And I want to get to that at the end here of maybe why he's not in, but Cody, I do want to shift to our final mini segment before we kind of get to the case for, case against. And I call this and twins.
No, quarterbacks eating dirt, pom-poms and short skirts, fans who won't quit, and those twins.
And what we just try to do here is look at the Hall of Fame today and think about, you know, who best reminds you of Lou? And it can be statistically, it can be just the way they played, or it can be an odd similarity. You're just like, well, this guy kind of reminds me of him, or his case was similar to him. Who would you say is his twin in the Hall of Fame today?
Okay, wait. Is this a reference to the old Bud Light commercials? Because if so, that's amazing. I love it.
We actually play the music right before we go.
Yes, so, all right.
Cody, I just want to point out, you were the first person to ask me about that. Some people listen back and they're like, that's hilarious. You actually just hit it on the head. So congratulations there. Now, I will say some of the voters I do talk to are a lot older than you. You're probably one of the younger people I've had in the pod, so I appreciate you get it too. I tell my girlfriend all the time, I'm like, that commercial in my age range was like the commercial for many years. Anyone gets that reference if I talk to them, any of my friends, but you were the first to call it out, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, that's awesome. We went back and watched some of those on YouTube around this year's Super Bowl because, yeah, that was just an iconic commercial growing up for sure.
A Hall of Fame commercial.
No doubt. So anyway, funny you mentioned that. I feel like we've already kind of covered this terrain, but if you look at, you know, just Lou Whitaker's comps on Baseball Reference, number one is Ryan Sandberg, a fellow second baseman who is in the Hall of Fame. And number two, it's Alan Trammell. You know, and I was like, is that just a coincidence? And then you look, their career numbers are so eerily similar. They both finish with just more than 2,300 career hits. Alan Trammell hit 285 with a 352 OBP throughout his career. Lou Whitaker hit 276 with a 363 on base percentage. Lou actually had more home runs, 244. Alan Trammell had 185. These were both two staples of longevity who were kind of ignored by the Hall for a long time. Alan Trammell, as you mentioned, did not get in until 2018, but then he finally did get in. Lou Whitaker still waiting on that call. So just between their numbers, between the weight they've had to endure to get into the Hall of Fame, there are so many similarities. And then when you consider how closely they're linked, I think that's the natural twin, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's absolutely the answer here. It's who I have down to. It is like between how long they played together and how almost I feel like they were trying to line up their stats at the end of the day too. It's almost identical. Again, the only difference between the two I really see, even All-Star games and Gold Gloves, they're almost identical. And Silver Sluggers they won are almost identical. The only difference, again, is that World Series MVP Trammell has. I think that holds weight. And then if you look at Trammell's career, his peak seasons were better. He finished second MVP voting one year. He was top 10 several other years. That could be, again, you look at the numbers, they're not crazy. One year he batted 343, so it's very good, and he stole bases a higher clip. But it could be more the personality, right? As you said earlier, Lou is very quiet, reserved. Trammell was not. He was more outgoing. He was more out there. The MVP race, your stats matter, but it's a popularity contest slightly too. The voters are the writers. They got to like you. And if they don't feel like they know you, you're probably less likely to be on their radar. And unfortunately, that's just how life is on this. The only other person I had down here, and this guy, this is cheating, Cody. He's not in the Hall of Fame yet, but his candidacy really reminds me of Lou. He played when we were growing up. He's probably going to get in based on his trajectory, but it's Scott Rolen, of course, a third baseman, not a second baseman, but Scott Rolen and Lou to me are very similar guys. Their statistics are almost identical. You know, Scott Rolen, excellent third baseman, probably never the best guy on a team, but always just solid, very consistent across his career. His war is probably what he's riding to the Hall. He has a 70 war, which is below Lou's, but among third basemen, it's very solid. He got 52.9% of the vote in 2021 in his fourth year. So he'll get in, I think, on that trajectory. But Scott Rolen, Lou, in terms of their contribution to the game, what they were putting up, you know, they were never having these all-time great seasons, but they were consistent. They were solid defensively. They had some pop in their bat. And they were just like guys that were around for a while that played at a high level. And I see that similarity very well. I think if Roland gets in, I have trouble envisioning how you can say, well, Lou doesn't deserve to get in either. And unless you're, I mean, third baseman somehow are even looked down more upon by the Hall than second basemen, who are looked down upon the Hall. So Roland too reminded me of him a bit as I was kind of going through this, and other names that came up, like Craig Biggio, very similar, right? Played their whole career for a franchise, played for a very long time. Barry Larkin also came up as a guy who, now he won an MVP award and of course played short, but he was a guy who was just consistent. I never thought of him as an all-time great. He was just a guy who was very good for a long time for one team. But he got in the Hall of Fame, no doubt, first year. So, again, these players, I'm not saying Lou's better than them. I don't think he is better than some of these. But I think he's in the same ballpark. And then when you see he couldn't even get 5% on his first ballot, it makes you wonder, you know, what were maybe they looking at when that came around. When you look at some of these guys gone immediately and then Lou couldn't even stay on the ballot, it's a little shocking and jarring. But again, I think voting has come a long way since 2001 to today. And I think that is why Lou has had sort of a resurgence in terms of just being talked about as a possible Hall of Famer down the road. But Cody, last segment here before we get to the final verdict here, we call this court.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is really where we do case for, case against, and we've been talking throughout, of course, you know, maybe why he should or shouldn't be in. But the big thing, I've touched on this a bit, but I want to come back to it because it is, I think, if you're pushing his resume out there, this is what I'm leading with every time. It's war. And I can go through a few of the staggering numbers that I haven't touched yet that really are just like, this guy is a shoe-in Hall of Famer if you're just looking at war, which you can't. But I want to know your take before I even go into this. Cody, when you're looking at the game today, again, you're young, you're 27, you're just starting your career. War is talked about more and more today, and I think people are actually starting to kind of understand how to look at it. It's still not a, you know, I still think if you talk to the common baseball fan, they're looking at batting average, home runs, RBI still today. But war is definitely more in the forefront in terms of when we're thinking about MVP voting, how someone's performing, what their actual value is. We do hold war more and more along the lines of traditional statistics. What's your take at war when you're evaluating players? How much stock do you actually take into it?
Yeah, I place a lot of stock into it. Maybe that's just because that's, you know, I came of age kind of in the metrics era. But I think it has become, like you said, if you just look at the way TV broadcasts have evolved over the past 10 years, the stats they would show, average homers, RBIs, and now you see war, you see weighted runs created plus on your average Sunday night baseball broadcast. I drop things like that in writing, you know, way more often without having to explain it, because I feel like the most educated readers are the ones who crave that information, and they generally have a good understanding of what it means. I think war is a pretty objective way to measure players against one another. And I think that's an important part when you look at Lou Whitaker's Hall of Fame career. It's a all-encompassing metric that takes everything into consideration, and it can show you this guy might not have been an MVP level player, but he was an above average player, close to an all-star player for 15 years, which, as I've said, is pretty remarkable. So I think it's definitely important. I think when you talk about the Hall, maybe there are certain iconic things that can play in, 500 homers, 3,000 hits, things like that. I think that does hold some weight. But, you know, I'm also a fan of judicial precedent. So if we look back and you see players who don't have the same career war as Lou Whitaker in the Hall of Fame, I think it gets a little puzzling. And again, I think something for someone my age that really puts it in perspective, Lou Whitaker, 75.1 career wins above replacement. That's higher than Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
You know, different position, but it's like, this guy had more war than Derek Jeter. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I got a laundry list of things I want to do here with war. And I, you know, here's how I you can't just look at war and put someone in the Hall of Fame or not put someone in the Hall of Fame. Cause I think there's some players who I think deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, like a Dave Parker, who don't even hit 40 war.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can just universally use that as a thing, but I also don't think you stumble into a high war. You you don't stumble into a 75.1 WAR by accident. That's not something that just he got lucky. It worked out. Like, you have to work to get that. As you said, higher than Derek Jeter. He, out of all second basemen, there's 20 second basemen in the Hall of Fame. He has the seventh highest WAR in MLB history. Everyone ahead of him is a surefire Hall of Famer. And then when you look at the people behind him, the Greg Biggios, the Ryan Sandbergs, they're all below him in terms of WAR. I was taking a look at the 80s, just the 80s in general, and I was looking at the highest WAR at each position just for the decade, not career, but who dominated the 80s. And the names are all, again, they're not stumbling into this. They're all Hall of Fame type guys, all-time greats. Catcher, Gary Carter. First base was Eddie Murray. Second was Lou. Shortstop was Robin. Yep. Third base, Wade Boggs. Left field, Ricky Henderson. Right field, Andre Dawson. Center field's the only one non-the Hall of Fame other than Lou was Dale Murphy. So those are, again, mostly Hall of Famers. Dale Murphy and Lou are the only ones not. But if you look at how high it was, his was 43.6. The only people on that list that were higher were Robin, Wade, and Ricky Henderson, all first ballot Hall of Famers again, then Lou. So Lou by WAR is kind of one of the top five guys in the 80s, in a decade. And when I look at the Hall of Fame for any sport, Cody, what I always look at is like, how did he go amongst his contemporaries for a decade of time? I think a decade of time is a long time. And when I look at the 80s, I think the best second baseman I have, Sandberg is one. I'm a Cubs guy. I'm going to put Sandberg as one no matter what, even if it's wrong. And then I have Lou at two. And then there's kind of a drop-off. And then there's players like Willie Randolph. There's a couple other second basemen that made a couple All-Star games. But other than those guys, I mean, he's a solid two, and you could make a debate he's one. And I feel like if you're a top two guy in a decade, you have a pretty good case. I don't know how you can kind of fight against that.
Yeah, I think it's funny you mentioned Dale Murphy, because that's such a like an opposite end of the spectrum argument, right? That he didn't quite have the Lou Whitaker longevity. But if you win two MVPs, like, you're a pretty iconic player. Dale Murphy is iconic to a whole generation of Braves fans, just like Lou Whitaker is iconic to an entire generation of Tigers fans. And yeah, if you're top two at your position for a decade, I think, you know, that really says something. I think that is that certainly makes you eligible of serious Hall of Fame consideration. I think that's another thing with Lou. It's not just that he's not in the Hall of Fame. It's that he didn't stay on the ballot. It's that even in 2019, he only got 6 of the 12 required votes. Like, he hasn't actually come close to being in the Hall of Fame, which is, you know, which is really a crime, I would say. If you want to debate, is he in the Hall or not? That's totally fair. But the fact that he hasn't really been in the discussion or hasn't merited 6 of 12 votes on the modern era ballot is definitely a puzzling thing.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, you know, if you're someone, again, maybe a younger voter, some older voters appreciate WAR too, but if you're someone that believes in WAR, I feel like he has to be a lock to be like, yeah, you think he's in the Hall of Fame. If you really do appreciate that statistic. If you're an old timer though, or you just, you know, advanced metrics, things are flimsy. Sometimes I see who leads, you know, some teams in WAR. I'm like, I can't see that being the best player. I mean, I look at things like how they hit with runners in scoring position, other things like that. But even if you're just looking at traditional statistics, I mean, among second baseman all time, Lou's 11th all time in runs, 14th in RBI, 16th in hits, 11th in home runs. And when he retired, he was 5th all time. Like, you look at his home runs, right? It's 2, yeah. I think 44, we said. It seems not impressive to us, right? And I mean, we grew up in the steroid era, but 244 for a second baseman in the 80s, they weren't expecting a second baseman to hit home runs. That's just it's 40 less than Sandberg, who I always assumed was this home run hitter because he hit 40 one year. But he had some pop in his bat. He actually finished top 10 one season. So he has those numbers. Again, there's 20 second baseman in the Hall of Fame. He's top 16 in every statistic, traditional one I just kind of read off, not to mention extremely high in stuff like walks, on base percentage, things like that. And then again, you know, Cody, we've been kind of talking about this too, but like, I think his defense is a little underappreciated in terms of one of the better second basemen of all time. He only won four Gold Glove awards, and I looked back at why, because, you know, I was reading up a lot about him. I was looking at advanced metrics. He grades out very well in the advanced metrics department for defense. And I was like, why was he only four Gold Gloves? You know, I was talking about Scott Rolen earlier. He had eight Gold Gloves. You think of the all-time greats, they're 9-10, like Sandberg had 10. I think Lou was a better second baseman defensively than Sandberg, to be honest. But it's because there's a guy named Frank White in the MLB in the 80s in the AL. He played on the Royals. I'm not going to pretend like I knew much about him before I went into this.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. So Frank White, he's one of the best second basemen of all time. He wasn't the best hitter, which is why you probably haven't heard about him. But in the 80s, he was on the Royals. Those teams were very good defensively. I knew that. But he won eight Gold Gloves, and he played basically the whole time Lou did. So Lou is pretty much fighting him for Gold Gloves. The years that White didn't win Gold Gloves, Lou won. And then the years Lou didn't win, White won. And if White wasn't around, and this is just happenstance. I know there's a player, I can't think of off the top of my head, when Brooks Robinson was on Baltimore and he was winning like 18 Gold Gloves or whatever he won. There was another third baseman who I've been told is like one of the best defensive third basemen of all time, but he could not win a Gold Glove because of Brooks Robinson. That really hurt just how we look at him. Mm-hmm. I think Lou suffered from that too. If Frank White does not exist. I mean, come on, Cody, generic name. You've never heard of him. I've never heard of him, really. He won eight Gold Gloves. If he doesn't exist, I think Lou gets almost near double digits, maybe eight or nine. And now I think maybe his whole Hall of Fame candidacy changes, because now you're looking at, okay, this is one of the best defenders of all time, because you're looking at just Gold Gloves, not advanced metrics. Then you're looking at he consistent for a number of years. That plays more into the Ozzie Smith route to get in, or some of these people that just got on their defense. Omar Vizquel, he might get in just because of defense. I think people latch onto Gold Gloves. As a kid, I did. That's all I looked at. And I think Frank White being there in the way of him getting more Gold Gloves does hurt him. And is that his fault? I don't know. He wasn't maybe the best, but he was an elite defensive second baseman for a very long time. And I think that does hurt his case a little bit.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame is so strange because there's not this objective measure of what makes you a Hall of Famer. That's why I think WAR is important, because it's the closest thing we have to a way to measure that. Again, Frank White. My apologies to Frank White. I'm going to go look him up after this. Never heard of the guy. He won eight Gold Gloves. That's a lot. I think one of my favorite players growing up was Andre Jones, and he was the best defensive center fielder of a generation. Yes. Sometimes I'm like, I'm a little biased, but I feel like he's a Hall of Famer, you know, and he could hit too, even though his offensive peak was relatively short-lived. If you just look at the Gold Glove totals, it's like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Lou Whitaker doesn't have 8-9 Gold Gloves. If he does have four, we can't discount four. You have to be pretty good to win four Gold Gloves.
Exactly.
And I think it comes back, some of his play style kind of mirrored his personality too. I had someone tell me once, go look at video of Lou Whitaker and see if you can ever find a clip where it looks like he's running full speed or whatever. And it brings to mind Jeter again. Jeter was glorified for, you know, his hustle for this and that. And I think Derek Jeter is one of the more overrated players of all time. Not that he wasn't good or shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but Jeter is held on this tier, I think, because of his personality, because of the energy he exuded. Lou Whitaker played with an effortless style. He was a great defensive player, but he doesn't have Ozzie Smith-like highlights where he's in the dirt. You don't see his helmet flying off running the bases. It was smooth. It was effortless. It was like this quiet greatness that was oddly reflective of the Lou Whitaker off the field too. Just kind of out of the spotlight a little bit, but that shouldn't really diminish what he actually accomplished.
Yeah. He did make things look easy. He was very nonchalant about things. And before we get to final verdict, one last thing. So I've been, Wrigley Field in Chicago is finally back open. It's beautiful. I was there last night. It feels good to be back in a ballpark. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Oh yeah.
And a couple plays happened yesterday in the game I was watching. It's not a big deal. Cubs won though, but it was the bases were loaded. It was the eighth inning. We were up by like four runs And Starlin Castro hit a rope, like way away from our second baseman, wherever he was positioned, way, way. And he made a spectacular play and got out of the inning because there was two outs. And we went to the next. We are now still up by four or whatever, and we easily close out the game. If that gets through, at least two runs are scoring, maybe even three with how hard this ball was hit. And I was just thinking of, like, how that defensive play might have changed the outcome of this entire game. And you kind of had to be there to see it. Like this, again, this is a random game in May. It doesn't really matter. But that play could have changed the outcome of a win or a loss, just one play. And from everything I've read about Lou, that was kind of his deal in second base. He was super smooth. He made plays like that that change outcomes of games, which is probably why his defensive metrics are so high. But he wasn't Ozzie Smith, as you say. He wasn't doing backflips too as well, like on the way to do it. He was just getting to the spots you need to, almost having a sixth sense of where the ball's going to end up before shifts were even a thing, and just making the plays time and time again over his career for the entire 19 years he played. And again, that consistency, it's not exciting. It doesn't get you, you know, yelling at the top of your lungs of why he needs to be in the Hall of Fame, but that can't be held against him. And it may be at this point. But Cody, I want to get to final verdict now. As I said in the beginning of the podcast, what I ask you here is two questions. One, if you were on that senior committee and you had a vote, would you vote for Lou to get in the Hall of Fame? And then two, do you think he'll actually ever get in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, both good questions. As I stated before, I think if we were to start from scratch and say who should be in the Hall of Fame, I would probably be more of a small hall guy, not a hall of very good. Like, you have to be elite or iconic to be in the Hall of Fame. But that's not the reality of what the Hall of Fame is right now. I think to approach it a little bit like a judge or an attorney and look at precedent, as I've stated before, is very important. So based off the precedent, based off the fact that he has the seventh highest WAR among second basemen and the top six are all in front of him, and he has greater wins above replacement than 14 other second basemen, I believe, who are in the Hall of Fame. Based on that, yes, I have Lou Whitaker in the Hall. And I do tend to believe he will get in based on the metrics, based on WAR. The next time he is eligible coming up in 2023, I think I said at the start of the podcast, I think Lou Whitaker himself, I talked to him shortly before the 2019 decision, and I think he felt he was going to get in. I think he had heard from some people and knew there was a strong case, knew that there were at least a couple people in that committee who were going to vote for him. It didn't happen. He was still quite a few vote short, but I think that momentum is still strong, especially when you look at the fact Trammell is now in the Hall of Fame, Jack Morris, his Tigers teammate, is now in the Hall of Fame. It seems like one of those things that's bound to happen. He's a name at the top of the list. Why isn't this guy in the Hall of Fame? And these committees are kind of designed to correct some of those wrongs, and that leads me to believe that we will see Lou Whitaker eventually get into Cooperstown.
Yeah, Cody, I agree with you on both fronts. I think Lou should be in. I mean, the fact that I didn't get into this earlier, I was kind of saving this for the end, but out of anyone eligible to be in the Hall of Fame today, so I'm discounting people like, you know, who are still playing today or who are not yet eligible. If I discount them and I discount, you know, people who are linked to steroids like Barry Bonds or anyone like that.
I'm voting those guys in too, by the way.
Oh, Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, how's Barry Bonds on the Hall of Fame?
That's not even close, okay? I'm not against them. I'm just putting them out of here because they're not in the Hall. The reason they're not in the Hall of Fame is because of that. Right. So if I discard them because, you know, they are not in the Hall of Fame for reasons outside of this, so Clemens, Bonds, and those guys, and people playing today, out of any position of people eligible for the Hall of Fame, Lou has the highest WAR. Only other guy playing the 1800s. So I'm going to discount him. I didn't see Lou play. I definitely didn't see that guy play. Different game. But out of anyone that's played in the last 100 years, that's a position player. I'm sorry. Pitchers, there's a couple more higher. But position players, Lou has the highest WAR. And again, I don't think that means everything. But again, I don't think you stumble upon that. And it's not like his statistics or his career – is not Hall of Fame worthy. It's not like, oh, we're just letting anyone in because he has a high WAR. Like, no, all of his numbers, they're easily top 15 all time for his position. I don't know if people just forget he was a second baseman or comparing him to anyone else, but again, home runs, he had pop for his bat, for his position. RBIs, he has more RBIs than Sandberg did. I think of Sandberg as a Cubs player, as a someone who drove in a bunch of runs, and Whitaker did more than him. It's just on the WAR front, as well as just traditional metrics, I think the guy is a Hall of Famer. I just think, as you said, he was quiet. He was maybe never the best guy on a team, but he played for way too long and was successful for way too long not to be in the Hall. And then do I think he'll get in? I do. As those committees get younger and younger, as advanced metrics get more and more prominent, even more than they are today, we could see a time, Cody, I think, where we look at like a certain WAR threshold, like we look at 3,000 hits today or 500 home runs. Like at some point, it just means like if you get to 70 WAR, you're a Hall of Famer. Because I could look at anyone in Major League history that's gotten to 70 WAR, and I don't know if I'd have that big of a problem with anybody that breaks that threshold. And I don't know if it's 70, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 80 one day, but I could see baseball one day, maybe 30, 40 years from now, we look at a 70 or 75 WAR, just like we do 3,000 hits, the 70 WAR club, the 75 WAR club, because there's not that many people that have done it. And him getting there, I don't think that committee can sleep on him forever. It's a little discouraging. He only got 6 votes, but the thing is, two people from that modern air committee got in, so now there's less people on that list. He's only going to continue to tick up until they disband and then start a new one. So I agree with you on both fronts. I do like to disagree with my guests, so this is unfortunate. We're both agreeing today on this, but we both, Cody and I both think Lou should be in the Hall of Fame, and he one day will get in the Hall of Fame. Cody, I want to thank you for coming on today. Really appreciate you taking the time. And I really appreciate you understanding that Ant Twins reference. You might be the only one this year to get that. So congratulations on that. That in itself made my day this morning. So thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That made my day too. I'm going to go tell my friends about that. I'm psyched. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right, so that is the end of our re-release episode of the Lou Whitaker pod. I hope you liked it. This is the first time, again, we've ever done a re-release. I don't think I'm going to do it too much, but especially some of my really early episodes, I'm not going to lie, I didn't have that many listeners early on. And gosh, the audience has grown more than I could have ever imagined. And there's players that I did a long time ago that, you know, maybe need a re-release. And I'll be taking a look at that, especially when players like CC Sabathia was my second episode. He's coming up for the Hall of Fame. I didn't have a guest. I was brand new to this. Maybe I bring a guest on and I talk about CC again. So I will think about it as we move forward, but I hope you enjoy the Lou Whitaker re-release podcast. That is all we have for you today. If you don't already, please subscribe to our podcast and Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you listen to podcasts. Follow our Twitter at Pod of Fame. If you don't know that, you have done your homework. We will be with you next Monday with a brand new episode, not a re-release. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll be with you with a Hall of Fame Market Watch on Friday. So have a great week and take care.